All right. So tonight, we are continuing with the five hindrances. And this would have been the class last week, except that it didn't snow. it's always very, very... I hate having to be the one to decide whether we should meet. I mean, because you can't just... Some places just go with, like, well, if PCC cancels classes, then we won't meet. But, like, it's in the evening. It's not, I don't know. But, it looked like there was going to be, like, freezing fog and stuff like that. And it was all going to be coming down right about 8 o'clock. So, and then, nothing. I just felt so, like, instead of coming here, I got my pajamas on. It just felt really strange. But I apologize for us not meeting, but all right. So now we are on to the hindrance of ill will. So the five, so this is a kind of a foundational teaching series of just real basic Buddhist teachings. So the five hindrances on the spiritual path are, sometimes it's called sensual desire. I kind of like the term worldly obsession. So we did a class on that. And if you're curious, I mean, I've covered this, the five hindrances on the podcast, plus we did a recording of that class, which should be available on the website. Then there's ill will, which we'll talk about tonight. Then we'll have three more classes. So one on sloth and torpor. And this is sloth-and-torpor. It's like the actual hindrance is a hyphenated thing. It's both aspects. So sloth is kind of the lazy aspect, not bothering to do what is healthful. And torpor is the kind of sluggishness of mind and body that results from that. And then when you slip into torpor, then you're more likely to, you know, so they kind of go together. Then the fourth one is restlessness and worry. Restlessness and worry. So there's, we'll go into that. And then the fifth one is skeptical doubt or uncertainty, sometimes called one or the other. So ill will tonight, vyapada is the Pali term, the original term. And it can also be translated as malice. And according to the Princeton Dictionary of Buddhism, it refers to the hateful wish that harm will befall another. Or this also just could be a lack of goodwill toward other beings. And this can be toward specific people or groups of people, human institutions. And I find for myself kind of a nameless, faceless other who's to blame. Like, it doesn't even have to have, you don't even have to have a specific person or group of people in mind. I just, as I drive and like the stoplights aren't timed right and I have to stop there for a long time, there's just a part of me that's just like, I don't know, who, you know, whoever is in charge of this is just, you know, really falling down on the job. It just, it could just be this, I don't know. And even sometimes there's just this sense of like, you know, the doorknob catches my sleeve and it's just kind of like the universe. It's like the universe is out to get me. So I thought we could do a little brainstorm on all the forms ill will takes. Who wants to begin? And by sharing something, you're not saying that you experience it necessarily.
Is it a word or an experience, or what are you looking for?
I guess how does ill will manifest in your life or around you? How do Yeah, how does it show up?
Irritation?
Someone desire for revenge,
disliking someone for their possessions,
liking someone,
disliking.
Oh, disliking. Oh, so kind of jealousy, resentment, envy, jealousy.
Or the ill will of, I hope that thing breaks.
What about like hasty judgments? Making hasty judgments.
Person could feel hopeless if they listen to too much, foods.
But how does that relate to ill will?
Well, just a kind of despair, maybe. Even if it's temporary, that's kind of buying into despair.
I think that's definitely quality, and it would be, when I'm thinking about a hindrance, that would definitely be a hindrance. Thinking it might be a little bit more in the, maybe in the restlessness and worry, or I don't know where a sense of kind of despair, maybe a little, but because the restlessness and worry would be kind of the anxiety part, and then maybe sloth and torpor might be the response of overwhelm. I mean, the ill will, if you're listening to too much news and it's resulting in ill will, I can't imagine anybody in here is feeling that at the moment. Just
this is outside of BWZ people, but I just thought if somebody bought into it instead of saying, oh, this is a downer, but just to buy into it. But you're right. It's more restlessness and anxiety.
Because I would think, the kind of ill will response to buying into it would just be, I don't know, it could be like hatred of whole groups of people. Blaming, like listening, like, oh, it's the fault of, right. These people or that party or that. Blaming, yeah.
Disdain for, it comes to mind, disdain for extravagant wealth. The 1% of
it. So definitely disdain and not just hasty judgments, but more long term. Solid judgments.
Damnation of the human race.
misanthropy?
Yeah. Misanthropy, yes.
One of the modern phenomena is the internet trolls. Definitely create ill will.
Yeah.
Oh, bigotry.
I love brainstorming like this because like if I had to sat down to make up the list myself, there's a number of these things that I just would have kind of left off, not thought of.
Disdain for maybe somebody that has a different ideology or belief system.
Would that be a judgment of someone based on their
prejudice
or I don't know, just plain rejection, I suppose.
Wishing misfortune.
comeuppance. So, I guess what makes, in the sense of, what makes these ill will a hindrance when we're doing spiritual practice? So, you know, Buddhism tends to be very pragmatic. So it's like, it's not just, you know, blaming and prejudice is just bad. It's just bad. God doesn't want you to do that. It's bad. It's very much, it's, you know, like, we don't do this because it hinders our practice and causes suffering. So, you know, it's very much just like, it's built into the structure of the universe that this isn't a smart thing, you know, a smart approach to take. So I guess I'm gonna unpack a little bit. At what point? I mean, these things are all kind of negative, I guess. But what makes them into a hindrance in your spiritual practice, in your attempt to be the kind of person you would like to be, that you aspire to be?
They kind of take away from the focus on improving self. And focus your attention on trying to change others.
That's a good point.
You create anger. A lot of it starts in anger, but if you're the victim of it, it creates anger. And that is self-hindrance.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of the goal is to free yourself from judgment so you can see things clearly. And that matter is obedience.
So this would be kind of clinging to, feeding, fueling, dwelling on.
Those are all blocks to being in the present moment.
And with that, with what Ruthanne was saying, like being curious, you know, always trying to be curious, not just have your own judgment, but just be open and curious as to what's going on. And then also, I feel like if you're accepting of others, you're also accepting of yourself. So accepting your own weaknesses and of yourself and of others, you're more accepting. All around, where if you're quick to judge someone else, you're probably very judgmental on yourself as well.
No.
So, all these things are like a reaction to something that makes you unhappy or makes you suffer. And these are it's just a continuation. It's like you're choosing to continue that suffering instead of stopping and choosing a different direction.
Stuck here is to be stuck in the kind of the us and them world view, which is rejecting the wholeness, the cohesive whole that we talk about. So
it's all about self.
Yeah.
What's been done to self, or what the self believes, or the self, you know.
A lot of them are like shoulds. Get irritated. Why are you irritated? Because something should be this way or shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
And then that creates even more anger.
Anger takes energy. You can be using that energy to more positive ends.
Everybody experiences a little bit of these things now and again, but this can become, as we all know, either through our own experience or witnessing others, you know, an incredible preoccupation where we're, Yeah.
I think it's the expectation that you have of others or how things should be, and you have to drop that, your expectation about how others.
I mean, it really kind of gets.
According to your view about how other people should be, you can't.
Yeah. Because you're really getting back to like the foundational Buddhist teaching of dukkha, right? Like, things aren't going to be how you want them to be. So you can either feel miserable or you can work on yourself and try to get past it. But we can fantasize about what we should have done or should have said or will do or somebody else should have said or whatever.
Fun making.
I mean, if only in real life we could argue with the eloquence that we have in our, you know, rehashed scenarios, which is just like, you don't understand. Righteous indignation. And there's also the aspect of we can turn this toward ourselves as well. Can turn that kind of judgment, as you were kind of getting at, rejecting parts of ourselves, blaming ourselves. And there's a hindrance. I mean, it's interesting the relationship between this and anger in kind of a purer sense. There's where, I mean, anger, to some extent, an angry reaction is just information. It's just a response that arises that tells us we think something is threatened. Usually ourselves, but sometimes some other things. We think something is threatened. So then there's this response, which in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's then what do we do next? And so really ill will is like, it's like taking what might have been a moment of anger or a situation that aroused anger or something, and then we dwell on it and make it into something more. We've held on to it, we've nourished it, we've dressed it up. So many of you would be familiar with this these verses by the Buddha from the Dhammapada. He abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those carrying on like this, hatred does not end. She abused me, attacked me, defeated me, robbed me. For those not carrying on like this, hatred ends. Hatred never ends through hatred. By non-hate alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. So sometimes you hear that translated as like, hatred never ends through hatred. By love alone does hatred end, or something like that, which has its own sweetness. But kind of in the original Buddhism sense, like, we're not talking about love as, you know, my love, does it end? It's the hatred ends through just not hating, like just dropping that ill will. So that refusing to carry on about the harm that's been done to you or the continued injustices that you're experiencing and turning toward non-hate. I mean, it's always important for me. I don't know about you, but it's always important for me to know this is not about accepting injustice or being passive when harm is being done. Just, it is not. because we don't, that's not what we want. And it's understandable to be upset about negative traumatic experiences or whatever. It's perfectly natural to be upset or to feel the need to draw boundaries or whatever. That's not really what this is about. Because, you know, I think we've all observed in ourselves or in others when it becomes fruitless or even toxic to keep on about it. You know, it's like I've had, and it's usually easy to witness in somebody else. You know, someone who really has, they've experienced something that was very unfair, very unjust, or very traumatic, or very, you know, and you just, you know, great sympathy. They have every right to be upset, but then they just kind of get stuck there. And then they just want to talk about this betrayal or this thing or this resentment that just over and over. So it's a kind of a tiresome, stressful loop of negativity, which actually makes us much less able to see things clearly, less able to take effective action. So really getting caught up in ill will is not the way to take effective action or address injustice or draw proper boundaries or anything. Like that's not actually not helpful. This is from Ajahn Brahmavamsa. When you really see ill will, you see that it's wasting so much time in your life. You haven't got much time to practice this path. Why waste it with the distraction of ill will? It's craziness. I think the Buddha described it as a sickness, and with that sickness, there is no way you can acquire any wisdom, happiness, or meditative concentration. So abandoning, how do we abandon ill will? So to go back to kind of the idea of the hindrances, that the hindrances are not really, they're not overcome. They're not overwhelmed with like positive, you know, aspects. Instead, they're abandoned. Like there's a way that the hindrances are things, they result from our choices, from the things that we're holding on to. So as the Buddha said, only by non-hate. So we have to find a way to abandon the hindrance of ill will directly without waiting for our circumstances to change. I mean, that's usually what we're fixated on, right? We're fixated on how someone else has to change or something else has to change. But this is, okay, you know, we can still hope that things will change, but we can't abandon ill will until we just turn the light inward. And another aspect of the hindrances is that they have an intoxicating, self-perpetuating quality. So that usually when we're involved in them, we lose sight of how they are harmful. And we just keep partaking of them. So, let's see. Let's brainstorm ways that we jolt ourselves out of ill will.
While you're doing that, can I ask, where does forgiveness fall into this?
I don't know, maybe it needs to go up on the board. Right now, ways that we, you know, that other direction, you know, like we see ourselves going into the feeding the ill will, and we have a choice to do something else. I think that's a good one. Which actually
is empathy as well.
And recognizing that we're recognizing suffering is also compassion.
Yeah.
How about acceptance?
which I always like to emphasize that Buddhist acceptance, well, I don't know, we don't have a corner on it, but is about what's come up to now. You know, it says nothing about what we're going to do next. You know, we can address the situation, we can change our behavior or something, but that kind of, well, here we are. This is, it's kind of, you have to accept it in order to move from here.
We're all suffering, finding empathy. I know for myself, it's not, usually if I say, oh, see it in my, and you know, see it in their shoes or their perspective, that it's more of like, what if that was my child?
Mm.
Even as an adult, what if that was someone suffering, what if that was a child? So I don't know why that gives me more compassion than just seeing in other shoes, that judgment of myself versus a child, what a parent would deal with.
Meta practice for anyone who doesn't know that, because this is the classic, one of the classic antidotes recommended for ill will. So it's really kind of a, I don't know, not artificial, but you know, it's a deliberate process of like calling someone to mind, and wishing them well, you know, kind of saying there's some phrases, may you be free from fear and anxiety, may you be at ease, may you be happy, and trying to sincerely feel that, and that you start that usually with either yourself or with somebody who's, or a being, like a dog maybe, who it's very easy to, or a child that's very easy to feel that for. It's unconditional. You just want the best for them. And then usually if you start extending that, you know, it starts to get more conditional. Like, may you be at ease as long as you stop doing that thing, you know, like, or, you know, may you be happy as long as you realize that all that stuff you have, you know, like, you know, we kind of, but the practice is, the idea is to be able to do that kind of unconditionally. And it definitely can just counteract that ill will.
I feel like everything that was in green for me, sometimes it forces me to look inward. Mm. Why is this irritating me? Why does this make me feel insecure? So maybe a step would be looking inward.
Yeah. Yeah, what am I wanting here? What is somebody triggering in me, perhaps?
Okay, so if you're not good at looking inward, you can get therapy.
You got some serious ill will going on. So you can kind of, you know, talk about it and examine it and learn to forgive or accept. Or get over something.
And I guess in between would be talking to a good friend.
Which is, that is one of the standard working with the hindrances. Noble friends and good conversation.
Condemn action and not the person.
What'd you say?
Condemn the action and not the person. I mean, it's oftentimes, you know, recognizing we're suffering and having empathy and compassion for a person, but when that person has gone so far out to commit violence against the innocent, it's hard to be compassionate. So I think the best you can do is condemn the action, not the person.
Hmm?
I was going to say that it's human nature. We were talking about all this ill will.
Yeah.
It's human nature for people to hang on to for a little while.
Yeah, that's where therapy and talking it out.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, we don't just like say it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Something
and that
atrocious, awful happens to you or a loved one.
And that is where the first step in working with the hindrance is just recognizing it has arisen. And that can be a powerful practice just in and of itself. Rather than like, realize, oh, ill will has arisen. Huh. You know, and then that really shifts things and changes things. You know it's not going to last forever. You know that maybe you shouldn't make certain decisions while you're feeling that way, or I don't know.
Remembering emptiness.
Oh. And I would kind of say also that practice of don't know mind. You know, and that's one too. When you're looking at somebody else, and that reminding yourself, like I don't really know what this person meant, or where they came from, or you know what their intention was, can help.
I like the use of the word abandon because that can have a negative connotation in our culture, but in this Buddhist precept, I picture like a child deciding, oh, I don't need this garment anymore. It's a hot day. And just letting it go.
Yeah.
And, you know, let it drop off of you without any, you know, reasons or locking into yourself about time.
Yeah.
Because kids don't come from that. They just go, oh, I don't need that. And,
But
that kind of innocence we can do.
Yeah. I one of the things that I like to do is, I don't know where this fits in there, but if there's somebody that I'm resenting for one reason or another, whether it's kind of a deeper ongoing thing or just a momentary thing, I like to look at some aspect of their personal effects, their what's hanging for their rear view mirror, or what's written on their sweatshirt, or you know, the kind of like phone case that they chose, or the picture on their desk, or some little thing that gives you insight into this is just a person who like has their own quirks and their own desires, their own way of trying to make sense of things. And I don't, for me, it's just this little window into them, you know, even if they're kind of brusque, it's like, but you still thought to like put that little thing on your rearview mirror. That's kind of cute. Depending on what it is hanging off their rearview mirror, of course, but... So just to review the standard steps, working with the hindrances, becoming mindful. Oh, this hindrance has arisen in me. And then noticing the nutriment of the experience. Meaning, and not so much even like the deeper causes, like people were saying, you know, examining why, you know, why, but like in the moment, what is there anything that is really feeding that feeling? Which really, much of the time, it's like dwelling on the story. It just makes it even more, you know, like, or talking with, instead of with a good friend, with somebody else who's like, yeah, you know, you're right, oh. That, you know, and noticing that there are those things that feed it and that you can... And the concept of nutriment is like, then you can take away the nutriment. And you still might have a lot of work to do, but at least you aren't, You aren't feeding it and fueling it. So mindfulness, aware of the nutriment and then depriving of the nutriment, and seeking out noble friendship and suitable conversation, which is tough, and it's a good thing to keep in mind as we are trying to be a good friend as well. Because I know my tendency is to want to support my friend and say, like, oh, yeah, that's terrible. Oh, you know, so unfair. But on the other hand, you know, I think we all need to vent. That's fine. But at a certain point, recognizing that maybe the supportive thing to do is to help redirect someone or bring up the possibility of moving towards some acceptance or forgiveness or planting some seeds in there like that, just for their own long-term well-being. I don't know. I mean, sometimes a good friend, I don't want my friend to lecture me, but sometimes they might just ask just the right question. Like, you know, maybe I'm resentful of somebody because I don't think they've been thoughtful enough in my life or made enough of a priority of our relationship or something. And then maybe someone will ask, like, huh, I wonder if they, you know, maybe think that you don't want them to be a part of your life. I mean, just, you know, a question that makes you go, huh. So those are kind of the supportive conditions for our effort to gain freedom from a hindrance. And then the antidotes, there's two different kinds of antidotes redirecting our mind. So the classic one for ill will is metta practice. Is really like, that's really like the classic, you know, an antidote. I've got this ill will, let's do the opposite thing. And hopefully they'll kind of cancel each other out. And then the other kind of antidote is contemplating the negative effects of not abandoning the hindrance. So there's some great Buddhist imagery about this, about the ill effects, the negative effects of not abandoning ill will. It says it is like picking up a hot coal in your hand in order to throw it at someone. Or picking up some excrement to throw at them. Yeah, you may get them, but... they also describe, Buddhist texts invite you to think about how ugly and unlikable you become when you're angry. And to think about, I think this is very clever, right? To think about when you're ugly and unlikable and miserable because you're full of ill will, that just makes your enemy happy. Buddhism is very pragmatic. If thinking about that can shake you out of ill will, it fine. Use that approach. You know, I mean, I've thought about that before. We're like, I don't know. We can dwell on something for so long, and just feel like we cannot let it go, or we will essentially be letting somebody get away with something. And yet, as we do this, they don't give a crap about what we think or what we're doing or how miserable we are. We're not having any effect at all. I think you're kind of saying, like, these feelings are going to arise, and it's important not to attack your ill will with ill will. Which we're doing if we just try to suppress or reject or push away the feeling. That's just, you know, more ill will. So you turn toward your ill will with loving kindness, gentleness, and patience. Kind of weird, but that's what's recommended. Actually works. Thich Nhat Hanh, this is about anger, but he says embracing your anger as if it's a small child and you're trying to figure out what's upsetting it. Is there anything that you can do to help? Paying careful attention to it so you can help you can find out what's going to calm it down. And there's, I mean, that might sound weird, but it's there's a big difference between doing that, you know, this kind of mindful attentiveness and openness. This is like a, you know, totally different than turning toward it going like, yeah, like with self-righteousness and indulging it and believing it, I guess. It's kind of subtle, but... what about that experience?
Well, anger in that case can be like the teacher. Mm. Be the mirror letting you see a part of small self you're not recognizing. Mm.
One thing that really helps me when I'm irritated, usually by somebody's behavior, is just the awareness that it's not about me.
Mm. That's a good one. Any other things people have found useful?
I experience a lot of confrontation in my job, just working through issues a lot. And when I find myself triggered, or when something makes me angry, or I feel like somebody's questioning my reasoning or experience, or what, for whatever reason I'm triggered and it makes me mad, I tend to just wait.
Mm.
I just don't say anything.
Mm.
And usually that person realizes what they've done and kind of backtracks and redirect our conversation, or something else happens and it kind of just unravels. But there is that moment where I want to and I just decide to wait a second, and things kind of just fall into place a little bit better.
That's a good point, that the was kind of the basic model of working with our behavior that we talk about a lot in the context of the precepts, which also has a precept against do not indulge anger, is that the first thing we do is try to stop. Just, you know, we've got the karmic engine is going, the momentum, and just stop. And we may not know, like, what else to do or how else to respond. But at least we just don't go down that road. Although, you know, then there's also the danger of avoiding all conflict, which some of us have that problem with as well. But that's kind of another topic.
I had the library book of Radical Acceptance, and I had to turn it back to the library soon. So I read the last page, and just the thing she says in her book, dealing with your anger, what's in front of your face, high emotion, the first step was pause, which is kind of accept, you know, in the moment where you're at or the situation is. That's also the first step in self-defense. Get in touch with your breath before you do anything.
Interesting. Else. Yeah, you'd think it would be react right away, but yeah. And there's still a little bit of difference between the, you know, the anger that arises in more momentary way and this kind of ill will. It's the Buddhist imagery of the six realms So there's not just heaven and hell, there's six realms. So there's heaven and hell, but there's also the human realm, the realm of the hungry ghosts, the realm of the fighting demons, the kind of demigods, and beasts or animals. And in the hell realm, it's said that the bane feature is hatred, is it's essentially ill will on steroids. Like, and it's that it's not just that beings have experienced anger or ill will, which we all do, but they have said yes to it. They have gone down that road. They have that's the path that they chose to feed that and to dwell there. And that is hell. Which is actually ties back to something somebody said about recognizing that if somebody's done a very terrible action, that they're in deep suffering, whether they admit it or not. Well, anything else about ill will? All right. Thank you all for coming. Thank you.